We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Agbabola, Agbabola. How much is money?
It's nothing.
Ballin', ballin'.
Alawa.
Premium or nothing.
Them or nothing.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Now you know.
Never let me get a boo. Forget what they're not.
Welcome back.
All right. So we're going to settling in. We're going to start with our mindfulness. Perfect. And I'm going to do a guided mindfulness focusing on our bodies today. So I ask that you get into your mindfulness position. And we're going to start with three cleansing breaths. And as you inhale, I want you to inhale. My body is mine, and I want you to exhale. I release everything that no longer serves me. Deal? All right, let's start with our first inhale. While you are in that place, I want you to imagine yourself sitting, looking around, getting your body comfortable with where you are, and notice the different sensation that you feel while sitting in this place that's your own. I want you to allow your mind to connect with the memories of the place. Connect to the colors and the sound that you hear. And just allow your body to fully be immersed into that place. touch your hands on the ground wherever you are, if there is a ground. Notice the texture of that. Whatever surface you're sitting in, just imagine how that feels. This is your place. This is your body. This is your comfort. Taking deep breaths if you need to, just relax any tension or any experience that you feel that brings about discomfort in your body. And just lean into the space that you're in, that you call your own. You to get up from the place that is your own, and I want you to walk towards a place you would like to go to, a place that you probably haven't been to but have thought about going to, and just imagine yourself walking into that space. How does your body feel to be walking into an unknown space, but a place that you know you want to go? Notice your thoughts of curiosity. As you walk into that space, explore the space the same way, the colors, the sound, and even people. As you reside in this space, notice this is the place where you're going to belong. Where you belong in that place is actually your own. It's your new space. And I want you to take a deep breath in. Inhale through your nose. Exhale. And bring yourself back as you leave this space into this present moment whenever you're ready. I switch it up on y'all a little bit.
That was a bit much.
I was okay. You had some thoughts. Let's process with Daphne first, then.
Okay. All right.
So, how was that experience for you?
Interesting. It was interesting. I found myself like keep going in different areas that I was like, "Wait, you're supposed to be." You're supposed to be mindful. Mm-hmm. So I find myself thinking about something else. I find myself not, I don't know. I just keep having to redirect. Okay, come back, ground yourself. Mm-hmm. Take a deep breath in. Like I said, I realized like, okay, you tense your back, relax your shoulders, you know, your jaw line. Like, why is it tense? Mm-hmm. Like, like, you know, unclench your teeth, open your mouth a little bit, let the air comes out. And your butt cheeks were, I was clenching it too, and I don't know why. Everything was clenching. It was not.
So it was like inner dialogue was a way in which that helped you kind of return back to your commitment and to the anger.
It's like, okay, you're not where you're supposed to be. You're wandering.
Yeah.
Like the wandering spirit. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which so one? I did hear you say that you are being mindful, right? And we always want to remember that really being mindfulness is just being present in the moment with whatever comes. So it sounds like you were quite mindful and noticing quite a bit about your body.
Yeah.
You were able to also bring yourself back over and over again when you did notice that other things were being present. So I like to look at those, what other people may call as distractions, as just more moments to be present with yourself.
Yeah.
More opportunities or reminders around, like, what's actually going on in this.
But how do you limit that, though? Is it just come with practice?
Yeah. But essentially, and maybe there will be opportunities where you can't limit it. I think a part of being open in your mindfulness experiences is just being welcome to whatever.
To whatever,
right?
To where you are.
There might be some moments where I'm able to really be locked in and not really pulled away by anything. And there might be some moments like today where you are kind of back and forth.
Yeah.
But you can still be present with yourself during that.
I read something. It's just like realizing that the images or whatever it comes, but allowing it to pass through.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Same. So I was like,
curious detachment. Yeah. Your experiences.
Yeah. Just kind of be able. Observing it and just not let it
consume us.
Yeah.
I would say for the mindfulness, while I was following along, I definitely got consumed with different things. I found myself having a lot of questions about the directives that you were giving. I was like, well, what is a time and a place where I feel comfortable? And I feel myself in like kind of like almost flipping through options of like moments. And then also like when you had instructed us to like look around while we are in that chosen space, like seeing myself looking like almost transporting to that time and like looking at the different things. And then also then having thoughts being actually, sorry, not more thoughts, thinking being evoked at that point around what that means and what that looks like and all of this other stuff. And then getting lost to the point that like I didn't even hear maybe some of the things that you might have been saying
the
to
other
us.
Prompts,
And then you would say something and then I would bring myself back to it. And what I liked about my experience was that I wasn't judgmental when I did miss those things, because sometimes I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, like, but it was very much just like, oh, okay, like, let me tune back in. And I didn't engage in the inner dialogue, but definitely early in my mindfulness practice, I did. I think it was some, like, one of the beginning ways, like, it's almost like the training wheels to help me bring myself back. And then eventually, after more and more practice, the inner dialogue is less, and I'm just able to direct myself back once I noted that cue of your voice. Just keep practicing and for those of us out there who continue to have that.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
In our dialogue, that's just part of your
experience,
your strategy that you use to return back to the anchor. After some time, just challenge yourself to not give yourself that directive and see if you can still return back to the commitment without that. And, you know, just keep trying.
Yeah. What about you, Tyler?
I noticed right away that I was able to get to my space. Like, and before you even gave prompts around colors and what it looked like, I was already there. I'm like,
pink sand, blue water. I'm feeling the sand in my hands. I'm particularly thinking about a particular time that I was in that space where it felt very like freeing for me and like a transition in my life. So when you prompted us to get up and leave, I noticed some willfulness around, like, I don't want to go. In fact, I want to get on a plane and go there right now.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I did experience that willfulness of not wanting to engage in the prompt.
Yeah.
At some point, I was able to just say, okay, I too engaged in some of my inner dialogue. Like, okay, you don't have to resist this. It's okay. You can always come back to this space. But I think that there was a little bit of, like, anxiety around, like, oh, no, I miss it here. I'm safe here. I like being here. Wow. So,
okay.
Yeah, I think that was mostly my experience. I didn't really notice too much outside of that, though. I didn't really notice too many sensations or any sensations in my body at all or anything that was not related to the exercise.
To the experience. Yeah. Good deal.
What does a smile then? Because I remember when I got to my place, I smiled. I said, ooh.
Yes.
Yeah, that is.
Is that a sensation?
That's just youthful. Yeah, I would say that, yeah, that is like a sensation, a bodily response to you being in your happy space.
And you express being in that space. Okay. I know when you had given the directive of even like touching the ground, I chose to open my hands and touch the couch and noticing the words that I was coming in contact with that like were words that I hadn't used before, like coarse and suede and smooth and all those different things, right? And so like that was showing just how in tuned I was to the experience, right?
That's
so something as you know, subtle as touching the couch can be something you are very mindfully engaged with.
Yes.
For sure.
What was yours like, ma'am?
Mine was, you know, I went in with the mindfulness really wanting to put myself and ourselves in a space that is comfortable for us and also looking into a space that is unfamiliar but that we've been excited to go to and seeing and noticing the difference that the body would respond to. And I know it will be a long mindfulness and it's okay to do that because sometimes we do need that. So for me, going into my space was more like a memory of an experience that I've had that I totally enjoy. And then transcending to a new space, there was a sense of an increase in my heart rate that I noticed. But I also noticed that I started smiling physically around going into it. And there's an excitement for me around the unknown, but also knowing, like, this is actually a place where I want to be, where I want to go, and I'm looking forward to
going. Right now.
Exactly. So for me, it was like, you've never been, but you're excited about going and imagining just being in that space and having that space own it. Also, I had the thought of that space being my body. So then I was like going into myself and notice a different sensation in how I feel. And I noticed wanting to adjust myself, but I was like, no, just like go with it. This is your space. This is where you are. So repeating the mantra that I had said in the beginning also was also a grounding of redirection.
Yeah. Nice.
So yeah.
Thank you for your offering.
Thank you. All right. So if you're wondering the stranger in the couch.
Stranger danger.
You know, but you may notice some facial structures that are similar to mine. You may notice she takes her beauty from mine.
Wow. Just like a younger sibling. I mean, talking shit already.
Yeah, I will be.
Introduced to the couch.
Nothing to do with our mother.
Yeah. I would like to introduce to the couch. She's new to the couch, but she won't be a foreigner to it. My sister, Daphne Altima.
Hey, Daphne.
She is a licensed nutritionist, and she is also, you know, the mother of two of my children.
An all-around hot gal.
And yes. Who's also single. But either way,
really
ready
no,
to mingle.
Necessary.
So you can shoot us.
Very unnecessary.
Okay. Because we came with dating.
So, and saying that, Daphne,
team
welcome
too
to
much.
The couch.
Team too much.
I am team too much.
Yes.
Welcome to the couch. And
thank you.
She is my older sister, and isn't she pretty young?
Yes. We're happy to have you. You look great.
Daphne, you look wonderful. Tell us a little bit about you.
Tell me, but first of all, she's rude. Isn't she rude?
That's your sister.
That is my sister. I do love her, though. She's all right with me. Yeah, tell a little bit about Daphne. You know, this is me. This is Daphne. So, but first, thank you for having me, and thank you for this, like, nice long mindfulness activity that we did. It was really good. She knows I need stuff like that a little bit more in my world. So that was a treat. A little bit about me. I am a licensed, registered, you know, dietitian. I call myself typically a public health journalist. The reason because I do that is because. Yes, sorry. I am. No, it's okay. She's going to do this throughout. It's okay. But it's because I've been in public health for, over 2 decades.
Yeah.
Well over 2 decades, and it's been different thing. I've been an epidemiologist for the state health department. I've worked in infectious diseases. Mm-hmm. I've done global health work. I've managed grants, done cancer research. And, you know, within... I've done some writings. And most probably... For the past 10 years, I've changed career directions really to focus on food. Mm-hmm. And that direction was intentional because when I was a senior EPI for the state health department, I realized that those that were doing some of the community outreach to the communities that are most in need did not necessarily, could not relate to them or did not necessarily look like them. And sometimes there is power in that, right? There's power in understanding someone's culture. There's power in understanding how people eat and why people eat and why people fellowship and so on. And so I decided at that time, as crazy as it seems, she knows how chaotic it was to go back to school.
Yeah.
And I went back to school to become a registered dietitian. And so fast forward to 10 years.
Can I slow it down real quick?
Yeah.
Like, the reason why you also went is that our cultural relationship with food.
Yes, like, yes, yes. I forgot that part. That is actually a very important part. Thank you for that reminder. Because that's, part of my write-up, I had to write to get into school was talking about how I was fascinated by, you know, I'm here when we came to this country, I'm here listening to these people that come out, oh, Haiti, you know, the poorest country in the hemisphere, you know, in
that
the hemisphere.
Wasn't your experience.
And that was not my experience. I was like, oh, what country they're talking about? This was not me. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't famished, you know, I wasn't hungry. I didn't have any issues.
You didn't live in a hut?
I lived in a hut. Listen, no hut. I had light, electricity, and everything. So, you know, all the worlds. So it wasn't mine. But the thing that was fascinating to me as I get older, as I get into public health, was that, you know, our family, they were doing well. You know, a grandmother lived until 97, her sister 102, 103, her grandparents, like longevity was it. Mm-hmm. And it just dawned on me, you know, it wasn't pharmaceutical interventions that, you know, that we see that's so prevalent nowadays. It wasn't modern medicine. It was eating from the ground.
What you consume.
You know, it was what they were consumed. They ate what was on the land, which is what you see culturally from a lot of, you know, West Indies and African countries, a lot of other countries, Asian countries that you see, you know, they ate what they grew.
Mm-hmm.
And there is power in that, right? Yes. And there's community. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of walking. There's not a lot of those things that we had. And so
trading with your neighbor.
Exactly. Man, yeah. And so that was the thing. I said, well, there's something to that. Mm-hmm. And so that actually was part of, you know, I went back and I said, well, you know, let's see. I think I have something to offer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I went back and it's been incredibly rewarding. I am an adjunct faculty at Howard University where I get to give back. I said that opportunity, it not only allows me to, you know, educate and just trying to get those that, you know, there's in the field of dietetics, I believe only 3% of them are, you know, black or brown.
Period. Yeah. 3%.
3%. So it's not a lot. So when, you know, it's really wonderful to, you know, come across students that are interested, you know, and that to encourage them, like, you can do it. And it's just lovely to me when I'm teaching or one of the TAs have said, I can't wait to get where you are. I'm like, oh, God, thank you.
That's
you
sweet.
Know what I mean?
That's
so
sweet.
That's wonderful. And so I've been doing that. So I do that. I am a freelance, you know, dietitian where I work in long-term care nursing homes or I, you know, do one-on-one counseling.
Yeah.
Started your business.
I did. Yes, I did that. And also I'm a researcher at Johns Hopkins University. So it's been a wonderful journey. I'm continuously learning. The field of nutrition is changing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that is true. There's a lot of stuff that he says. There's a lot of stuff that are
that's not false. True.
That bias. Not true. There's a lot of myths. There's a lot of myths. There's oh my gosh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
and that's why. You know, being a dietitian, going to school, doing our training. Our training is not, you don't go to school and become a dietitian. Like, mm-hmm. you have to do the 4-year degree. You have to have your internship, which is unpaid, y'all.
Well, mm-hmm. we can relate.
For that. A year. Right. That's what I mean. Like, you know, and we have to do that. In addition to that, you know, you have to maintain continuous education. There's just so much to it. And what we do is evidence-based. It's backed by evidence. And so it's been really rewarding. It's been a rewarding experience. Yeah, so that's kind of like, that's Daphne.
I love that. Thank I'm excited you. To have you, Daphne. Aww, I think yay. That the relationship between food and mental health is so important mm-hmm. and so relevant, particularly to people of color, how that relationship and experience with food is really impactful for like how we eat, what we choose to eat, mm-hmm. how we have access mm-hmm. to food. So yep. I'm excited to get into our discussion today.
Let's get into it, Ms. Thiwa. Yeah. Let's get into it.
All right. So let's get into our confessional.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And my dietitian gave me a 3,000 calorie diet.
Okay. I'm feeling conflicted about the diet my nutritionist gave me. At 25 years old, slightly overweight, with a 26.4...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
For BMI and high cholesterol, I know I need to make changes and I want to be healthier. But being told to eat only 1,300 calories a day feels extreme. I'm 5 feet 9 inches, 175 centimeters, and 178 pounds, 81 kilograms. This just doesn't seem like enough fuel for my body. I felt constantly hungry the past few days, and I can't shake the feeling that something isn't right. I don't snack much, and I'm mostly sedentary during the day since I work at a computer, but I still get in about 4 hours of cycling each week. According to every calorie calculator I found, 1,300 calories is below my BMR, which means I'd be eating less than my body needs just to function. I'm trying to trust the professional advice I was given, but I can't ignore how miserable and drained I feel. Should I just push through this and hope my body adjusts? Or is this a sign that I need to see a different dietitian? I don't want to fail at this, but I also don't want to end up feeling worse, physically and mentally, on a plan that isn't sustainable. If anyone has been in this situation, how did you handle it?
All right, so what are your thoughts about that?
Oh, man, so I think just by listening, 1,300 sounds
low.
Yeah.
For a male, giving that, where did the 3,000 calorie come from, kilocal come from? I didn't listen.
They didn't even say. Like, yeah. So
going from 3,000 to 1,300 is a little confusing to me because that's like definitely more than half of what he used to consume. And based on his height and the information he provided, I think the number, first of all, kudos to you for going online to find a calculator, you know, basal metabolic, you know, your BMR, mm-hmm. which is basal metabolic resting, you know, right? Kudos to you for finding that. But that's basically what you will need at rest. So that doesn't take into account your physical activity. It doesn't take into account, you know, how hard you're working, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that only, if it's the right calculator that I think you're talking about, I believe it takes into account your age, your gender as male, your current weight, and your height. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't factor into your activity.
And just to be clear, the BMR is just like what your body needs in order to just like do the regular
at rest,
stuff?
At rest. Mm. Okay. Just for your body, just the your the metabolic process in which your body goes through, just at rest, nothing, you know, that's what it needs for your body to function. That's
basically just to function, not doing anything else. Like your organs to do, yes, exactly.
For your body to do the processes that it needs to do, that's basically what that is, right? That's just a minimum to maintain that. And that will maintain, you know, the weight in which that you're in. But it doesn't, you know, the 3,000 calories may have been a little bit more, but usually we put you in a calorie deficit.
Right.
So, you know, to help you lose that weight. But I'm happy to look at this more, giving that.
I think he gave you some more
detail. Yeah, he has some more detail. But he actually did provide you quite a bit of data for me to tell you, you know, for me, you know, he provided his current weight, his current activity level, which is awesome. In the U.S., you want at least 150 minutes of rigorous activity. So, so which seems like he's getting that, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. So I say keep doing that. You know, 1300 kilocalories is low because, you know, some of the questions I will ask, like, you know, are you feeling hungry? But what does that mean? Like, you know what I mean? Are you hungry in between meals? How much are the meals that you're getting? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, for example, like what type it is? Do you have proteins? What type of protein are you getting?
Yes.
Did he say what his culture was?
Or
was
no, but I assumed because he used some UK lingo. I assumed that they were from the UK.
They're from the UK, but I also think what was interesting, he did say that he is hungry.
Yeah.
Well, that's what was concerning to me. Yeah.
Which to me, because just for our, you know, viewers and stuff, calorie deficit, because I just know it from my own personal things, is where you eat less than what your like
recommended.
So let's say for me, we can use me as an example. Typically about 2000 kilocalorie for my like not doing anything, right? Mm-hmm. For my current,
that's your BMR.
Yeah, like for my for about yeah, just okay. like at the level with me not doing sedentary, not doing any activity, mm-hmm. it's just about that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's about a little lower than that. But for me to be in deficit, you know what I mean? If I want to lose weight, I'll usually typically they say about decrease that by 500 kilocal, 500 to 750.
Yeah,
vary based on what you all your lifestyle factors, etc., and multiply that by 5, and that equates to about. Losing about a pound of fat per week. But it's such...
There's so much more that goes
exactly.
into
it. It's so
but
complicated.
I wanted to be clear that the deficit... Because don't be... Our person that just did this, you are in a deficit, but the deficit that you're in is 1,700 calories.
That's what I'm saying. 3,000, like
3,000 to go to 1,300. That is going to get your body into starvation.
Right.
Which is then going to probably
slow down that metabolism.
For failure. It's just, it doesn't.
Yes. But then it will affect the mental health around.
Mental health, physical health, and then the rebound.
Goes into the starvation.
There you go. Binge eating and these other things.
So like the deficit is only, you only really need 500. So an appropriate thing with very limited information you know about this person would be 25 to what? 22?
Yeah, 22, 25. But again, but he's cycling. You need to take that into account. He's doing like his cycling. I'm not gonna lie.
It's giving some like body dysmorphia and or like disorder.
I mean, it could, but
this eating disorder type because of, I feel like it's a tricky thing around what he's being told and what he's doing, which can be confusing to people. I know for me, who struggled with eating disorder in the past, is around a nutritionist. I've had several of them, but my sister is the right one. But a nutritionist can tell you one thing, but at the end of the day, it is your core body. But when you're giving two messages, like my physician would give me one thing. Then the physician would send me to the nutritionist, and the nutritionist would give me something different.
That's confusing.
So I think for him, it's a sense of this is how things happen. Mm-hmm. And he builds up because when you, there's not a sense of consistency, what's right and what's right, then you left to do things yourself.
And my question is always like, how is BMR culturally considered? How are how is that culturally considered? How are we looking at even the calorie deficits and like the need for calories in a way that is culturally considerate per individual versus just this like blanket idea? This is what we're supposed to have.
So I think everybody's different. My dietetics should come from an individualized place. Right? Taking into account cultural factors, lifestyle factors, you know, medical condition, genetic history, all of that, right? BMI, I typically don't like to use, which you, you know, mentioned, but BMI really is just, you know, height to weight.
Yeah.
That's body composition. They don't take into account anything, all this. So typically when you have different cultures, you know, if you're more like voluptuous or whatever, you may not
right
have
here,
an issue.
They don't count the curves, Jay.
It may be an issue.
They be missing it.
But there is, the biggest thing is we have to be mindful about, which I am very sensitive to, is I am not very quick to make extreme cuts,
changes
to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And this is only my opinion, but I am going through the journey with you.
Yeah.
I meet you where you are.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean? And so when we get so restrictive, and you know what happened is like, well, you're doing this so much so fast. Mm-hmm. You're not giving his body nor himself or mm-hmm. his mind mm-hmm. time to really process the change that needs to happen
right.
for him to do what he needs
right.
to do. Mm-hmm. There is an education component that comes mm-hmm. with that. Yeah. That was like, okay, well, what is hyperlipidemia? Mm-hmm. Why do you have high cholesterol? First of all, what are the tests that your doctor did to say you have high cholesterol?
Right.
You know what I mean? They had to do a blood lipid panel. And within that, there are, you know, if it's a general one, you have your, you know, your total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL. Explain to him what that means. What foods that he needs, you know, to eat to increase that HDL.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is what we call the good cholesterol.
Yeah.
And what foods that he needs to decrease to, you know, decrease the yeah. LDL, which is the one that's considered the bad cholesterol. And what does that mean?
Yeah, you told right. me that, girl.
And, right. you know, but I'm saying taking into account that, mm-hmm. you know, going from 3,000 to 1,300, it's just like, oh, my goodness.
And I
like,
need some more information.
I need
on
some
why.
More information. Yeah. Why? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so.
And what am I even consuming in that 1,300?
1,300 calories.
Right.
Does
that yeah. matter?
That's why I like the fact that you said you're using our good dialectical language here of saying that, like, there's good fats and bad fats.
Yeah, you go.
It's not really as simple mm-hmm. as that, right? Mm-hmm. They say, oh, you need to consume this amount of calories,
mm-hmm.
but they don't tell you what foods mm-hmm. need to make up the
yes,
calories
yeah.
that you're
yeah.
taking.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
how, and also the ingredients, mm-hmm. the, I believe there's like the macros of
yeah.
it that are also important. I found
yeah.
like after
yeah.
a while, even again in my own personal thing, that like macros are even more important as the calorie
mm-hmm.
like intake that you're taking in. How much protein, how much carbs,
right.
how much fats that you're taking in, especially if you're wanting certain goals.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right? Because mm-hmm. I'm even looking at what he said. He's 5'9", 178
This is what
pounds.
I'm saying.
That doesn't seem...
overweight.
Like, that's what
that's not, but that's
look,
what
if you give me a minute,
no,
I can pull
it
all out and I can calculate that for you.
For a male? For a male.
And how
also,
old is he?
25.
Yeah, 25.
I'm going to send you a message to tell you how much it is.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think what yeah. he's stuck on, it was the BMI.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
BMI, I believe, was 28 point mm-hmm. something, which is...
What, 28? It was 28?
26,
right?
26.4.
So, which is actually considered... overweight.
It's,
right.
That's
it's
what
just
I was
like,
say.
It's like
it's
overweight.
Overweight.
It's
not,
it's not
obese,
even obese or whatever.
It's not any of those things. But I think at depending on your history,
mm-hmm.
also, we live in a diet culture.
Listen.
Yes.
We live in a culture where, and we're starting to come back to skinny,
mm-hmm.
double
I wanna
zero,
get into that.
XXX. Like, so, mm-hmm. like, in to some extent, some of the things that this person is bringing into the room, I think, is a... is an after effect
sure.
of the things that are going on
mm-hmm.
in the world. Because
mm-hmm.
to when we look at it, a 25-year-old male who's 5'9 and 178 pounds does not seem like something of concern.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
maybe the way that he is shaped,
mm-hmm.
right, is what is causing the concern,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know for me, a lot of people are saying that like the way you carry the weight isn't as much as, it's not a health thing,
mm-hmm.
unless there's certain markers that tell you, right? They
right.
say
precisely.
Like if you hold certain things in your, but you hold them as a male and it feel, like you have to go through the, is it
right.
hard
yeah.
versus it being soft? Is it like, there's so many things
so,
that
right.
go into that.
There is different shapes for the female, like where the weight is. If the weight for a female is, you know, for anybody is around here, right? It's
mm-hmm.
close to your heart, so that's not good. But if it's around your hips, then that's fine. So you got to really, you know, central adiposity and different, you know, different way where the, you know, the fat where you're holding it. Yes, it influences. But the bigger thing for me is that, you know, not even muscle weight or whatever is what he said. His doctor actually said, you having some, you know, you have high cholesterol, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that's the bigger issue for me at this point, right? Because then you somehow, your doctor, I'm assuming, you know, conducted a test.
Right.
Where, you know, to see, you know, have your biomarkers said, hey, this is concerning. Mm-hmm. And it is concerning because we do know, you know, eventually weight, you know, overweight and obesity is a risk factor for these things. So include high blood pressures, diabetes, and hyperlipidemia. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that is concerned. So that's why he has to address it, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just like the how has to come, the individualized aspect of it, right?
That's fair.
And so, but we don't want
losing
him.
Losing weight is not the only way
Well, yeah, there's no. Well, there is actually, what are you eating? Like, what is it that you're putting? What is it that you're putting in it? Like, where, what are your foods coming from?
So losing weight is not necessarily the first thing to eat.
No, just, I gotta know.
Because you gotta think about your sodium and, you know, I live with you gotta think about your sodium intake, you gotta think about the oils and different stuff that you are using.
The type of fats you consume. The type of fats
that you consume. Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean?
There are that different types of fats. That feels consuming. Like just thinking about all the things.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But the type of meats. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? You mentioned macros. So, you know, when people, a lot of people, you know, especially, you know, especially if you're in the weight industry, you know, bodybuilding industry, you'll hear them think about macros a lot. And those are, you know, your carbs, your proteins, and your lipids, right? And so typically, you know, carbs has a bad, you know, that's the thing.
Rap.
Like, my gosh. But guess what, folks? You need your carbs.
You need them.
You
do.
You need
that's
your
the
carbs. Is the number one. Your body, you know, use glucose as the number one fuel source. That's what it is, what it does. That's what it prefers. That's what your cells prefer. So you need them. But again, going back, what type of carbohydrates are you eating?
And
so
also talk about the effects of carbs, because, you know, you
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, it depends. Like, right.
How that... We have mood, how it affects the mood.
Yeah, so we have different type of carbs, right? Mm-hmm. You have complex carbs, and you have you know, the refined sugars, the refined carbs. So that's where you're thinking your white rice.
That's the simple. That's
your
donuts,
simple sugars. Yep, your simple sugars, simple carbs. You have those, and you know your body is just go is spike your blood sugar and goes down. And those usually, when you think about your donuts, your refined carbs, they don't really. You go to Dunkin' Donuts, get a donut.
They're not providing you nutrients.
They're not. Really. They're not what I call nutrient dense.
Yeah,
which means that they're just high in sugar, and just that's about it.
Mm-hmm. And how does that affect your mood? Like you were telling
me. I mean, well, you crash. Like, you know, it, you have this like spike in blood sugar, and after that, you realize like you feel bad. You know, you feel bad. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't really do anything for you because it's not, you know, it's not feeding your cells.
It's also not. It's not a longevity. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah,
you're
it's
saying,
not. No,
that, like, you'll eat the donut, and within what, maybe 10 to 20 minutes after
you want something else,
it will. Give you that burst.
You, if you're going to eat something, make it count.
Yes.
And you know I mean? I like that idea. I think that the conversation that we're talking about, too, is like how certain foods can impact our neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine. So what are your thoughts about how diet culture can influence those things?
Oh, my God. The diet culture, the yo-yo diets.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much that could be said about that. Unfortunately... We live in a society. Well, I'll preface this by saying that according to the CDC right now, approximately 60% of adults age 18 and over in America are overweight and obese.
Damn.
Yeah, that's huge.
60% is like a whole majority lot. Of our population.
That's what I'm saying. So it's not.
Actually,
it's not. This is.
Yeah.
This is
a problem. Talking about us like that too.
That's. This is a problem. Mm-hmm. And. And I can't really, you know, I get upset when we actually put it on the consumers.
Mm. Yeah, because to me, my immediate thought, my conspiracy theory brain said that this is a systemic issue.
That
it has to do
Listen
with the food that is
Listen
actually provided and accessible to us
it
and
is.
Not actually what we're choosing to consume.
Yes, that is correct. And so I always, you know, I tell myself, you know, social media may have been great for a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
You understand? Mm-hmm. But it also has been detrimental to quite a bit and
Hell
to include that diet. And, you know, this whole diet culture, like, you have to be thin. You have to look a certain way.
Your
you
skin
know,
has to be
your
glowing.
Skin
well,
has
we,
to be glowing.
We went through a period where thick was in for
we did.
A couple
we did.
Of years.
A couple
and now
of
we're
years.
Getting back to the.
But listen to me, that European ideology continues to plague our communities and make us feel like that is the ideal of beauty that we need.
Exactly.
And I don't care how you look like, what culture you're from. It's just.
It's
that's
ingrained.
It's embedded.
Yeah.
It's embedded. You can't
colonization did a number on us
listen
in lots
to me.
Of ways.
in a whole lot of ways. And so when you think about that, you know, this culture, you know, I felt like led through that. So when you think, oh, you know, I'm going to diet, I'm going to try to lose that, you know, remove carbs, for example, you remove carbs, you really, your diet is supposed to be 45 to 65% carbs. Yes. So you're removing like a whole nutrient.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Who said that was the right thing to do? Right. And then you realize, and that's when you start getting into this disordered eating pattern. That's when you start all of a sudden you gain all this weight.
Right.
All of a sudden you have, you start, you know,
or you're up and down.
Up and down.
Yeah.
You have this issue
with you ashamed. The energy that you've lost.
Like
45 to 65% of carbs being like part of your energy resource and you cutting that out.
Where are you getting you energy from?
Putting that in. You can't help. No wonder you're what's called eating all the fats are, because fats
or
give
craving
you,
sugar.
But fats got a bad rep too.
They do.
Your body needs fat. Your body needs fats.
Your brain. Your brain. Your brain needs fats in order to like function.
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah. Exactly.
And
you
so
know,
that's where you say like the education comes.
The education
into play
is huge
because there's a lot of lack of information. I remember in like health class when I was in elementary school, they would teach you like, okay, this is, mind you, I heard that the food pyramid is not really
we don't use that anymore, but we have a better method.
Either way, they taught you some things, even like how to like, you know, put certain things together. Hey, make sure you have salad. Like, they don't teach people that anymore.
Yeah.
That's not a holistic generalized. Well,
somebody's
experience.
Teaching them, but I don't know if it's someone that actually knows what they're doing.
No, it's perhaps social media
influencer who is just like,
who has an eating disorder.
I had 2 pieces of rice today, and that's how I lost
or
all
what,
my
what
weight.
Or what did I eat today? And you're seeing what people are eating, and you're like,
girl dinner.
Yeah, I know, but I'm going to cheat. I'm a cheat, like, because this is actually very important to me. And I told my sister, I said, I put some notes because there are some things I really wanted to get out here. What social media and everything, like you said, those influencers did, is this constant like cycle of weight loss and weight gain, which is actually not good for your heart.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not good for your body. And then you have this whole moralization. Oh, this is good food. This is bad food. So we start shaming people.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so there is no such a good or bad food. Right. Yeah. There's just food. Mm-hmm. And then there's this whole thing. And she knows that's like a very emotional thing for me, which is the fat phobia.
Yeah,
with bias. It looks funny. I feel like I'm about to tear up talking about it. And she knows about it. Is the social and the discrimination that comes with against larger body. I'm trying not to cry. We come with larger body and we overlook everything about that human and who they are and how beautiful they are. And not understanding obesity is a disease. Yes. And I think we get that. And I think it's with the help of like the whole GLP-1.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Talk about that too.
That's coming in. It's making what it does is it's like it's challenging that myth. Like, shoot,
that
this
it was
is a
choice. Because people will keep making it seem as if, like, oh, you chose to
so
be
bad.
This way. And for me, like,
oh my God,
has been around people of larger bodies. Mm-hmm. You are the ostracizing, the demoralizing, the literally making them feel like they are less than second class
citizens. It's
because
it's hard.
Of things that don't always have anything
to do with them. Mm-hmm. And part of it too is just that there are studies that actually shows that schools, Ivy League schools, you know, those that are of higher BMI have a, you know, lesser chance of that, even in certain type of jobs. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that is really, I don't like that. And it really, like I said, it affects me because I'm just like, you idiot. They have nothing to do with this. And, you know, it's I don't know, it's incredibly helpful. But going into the GLP-1.
Yeah, what are your thoughts
that
about
you thought about that?
It's definitely
it's
hit us like a
it's
wave.
Taken over for the last few years.
I have my own personal experiences.
Like, yes. So full disclosure, I am a dietitian that I do work on a couple of studies that use GLP-1. So I'm just going to put that out there as well. Just know, you know, put it out there. So when I think about your GLP-1s, if anybody don't know, you're talking about your Wegovy, your Ozempic, your Mounjaro, right?
And Zepbound.
Yeah. So those are initially developed for diabetes management.
Right.
So, but have gained popularity over the years for weight loss, right? Fine. Great. So the focus is, you know, what works. Well, the good thing about it is for the diet culture we're talking about, it's less on restriction and, you know, the myth that we're talking about, you know, now it's like, oh, obesity is a disease, like we can see it. And it's just more of a more inclusive approach to it, right? So, and for that, it provides an option for people that, especially with metabolic condition, with type 2 diabetes, who have the metabolic syndrome, like, which means, you know, you have your waist circumference, you know, over a certain number, you have hyperlipidemia, you have high blood pressure, whatever three or four factors that you have, it provides an approach, you know, for them, which is fine. But where it becomes not fine is those that are using it to get at that whole thin
look. Right. Yeah. I think too,
like, still meaning that they don't have any of the factors that you talked about, so, and are no just obesity, wanting to,
there's no,
I would also say, I'd also say how, like, capitalism creeps up in there too, right? Whoosh, like, who has access to GLP-1s?
And that's what I was going to tell, like, you. So yes,
the money thing. Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that equity is a big thing for me. Look, I'm funny how to say it now because we're in an environment we can't use equity.
We can't
use our sand, you know, whatever.
Here you can.
We give a shit about diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I do, I'm mindful of a thing, but accessibility and equitable, you know, access to it is an issue. So keep in mind, those drugs were designed for something else, metabolic conditions, right?
Right.
So therefore, insurance is not going to really cover them.
If you don't have them.
So think about those people that probably necessarily need those. They're probably not going to have access to it because they're incredibly expensive.
They are.
Because I remember for a client who was interested in it, and the doctor basically said, well, the insurance won't cover it unless we exhaust all other medications. Yeah. Now, may I remind you, depending on how you look, like your history, your genetic makeup, not every... let's say drugs for high blood pressure. Some black males don't respond as well as some, you know, other people in the population.
Right.
So you got to be careful with that. But so if you need that, it's something that you need. Some people need that jump start, right? Yes. And the GLP-1, you know, made that. And so, and for that, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you got to understand, there are some implications to it.
Yeah,
right?
I was going to ask that too, the side effects.
The side effects to it. So it depends. Side effects as it relates to what does it do to your body? Or
GLP-1s, or even just like the mental health aspect. I can share about a little bit about my own personal experience.
Okay, let's hear it.
I would say that the challenge that I ran into is like having a history with restrictive eating and challenges with body dysmorphia already.
Yeah.
Losing a significant amount of weight has been a challenge for me.
Yeah.
And when I say significant, I probably lost like 30 pounds when I was on them.
Well, that's significant.
That's
significant. Yeah, that's significant. Yeah.
It's difficult for me to shop for clothes. It's difficult for me to actually see myself in the smaller space. I have no clue what size I wear. I'm like very conscious of like, okay, now you've gotten here. How are you going to maintain that now that you're not on it anymore? And I think the thing that saved my life for sure was working with a nutritionist through that period. Mm-hmm. Like, she helped
that's my role.
Change my lifestyle rather than just taking
thing. Tyler, thank you for saying that. Yeah.
That's it.
So thank you for saying that. So that is the thing. So the long-term thing that we are seeing initially is that if you have to decide for yourself if it's going to be something that you're going to be on for the rest of your life.
Right.
Because what we're seeing is that, as you stated, those that actually take it for the 6 weeks or 3 months or 6 months or whatever time they're on it, as soon as they get back off of it, they start putting the weight on.
Yeah.
Sometimes more.
Because you haven't really done anything to change your life.
What I love with some of the projects that I'm working on is that there's a dietetic component, there's a lifestyle component. And that's why it's so important to me, which is why I'm part of them, is that in addition for you to be, you know, using those GLP-1s, what else are we doing to basically create a lifestyle that is that you can manage? You have to do that. So it's part, it's not the solution.
Yeah.
Right. It's part of a solution that include changing your lifestyle. That's include movement. That's include your mental health. Keep in mind, I continue to say, sometimes when we have issues, our relationship with food sometimes stems from other issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay, for sure. I like that you brought that up, because oftentimes the clients that I have mm-hmm. who struggle with some sort of disordered eating, mm-hmm. whether they are fully diagnosed or they're just having some challenges mm-hmm. around eating, they've often experienced some sort of trauma. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Food can be a very easy thing to control. Mm-hmm. So you will find people who has maybe had an out of control experience, like trauma or some sort of assault. Mm-hmm. It's very common for them to also maybe have some restrictive eating mm-hmm. or something around their food, because that's something that they can have control over. Mm-hmm. What I can mm-hmm. choose to eat or not to eat.
Yeah. And so we have to address mm-hmm. the underlying conditions mm-hmm. within that, so we can do that. So I said, like, it's like a multi-level intervention. Yeah. You know what I mean? The mind, the body, lifestyle, movement, how we're going to carry through that. Understanding that, yes, what I try to tell the clients too, I said, let's be clear. There's a possibility you will put some of that weight back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But let's be okay with that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How can you practice mm-hmm. that acceptance?
Okay. How can we practice that acceptance? But also there is this thing we call, health at every size. Mm-hmm. HAES, health at every size. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's that, what does that look for you? For example, someone told me recently, I said, well, what is your goal weight? And they told me, well, according to this pamphlet I'm looking at, I want to get at this number. Okay. I said, okay.
Why?
I said, let me reframe that question. Mm-hmm. What weight, can we think about a time when you were at a weight, you look in the mirror, you're like, dang, I look good. I'm feeling good. You know, everything is look. My biomarkers, the doctors is not telling me, my cholesterol levels is out of whack, my vitamins are out of whack, I'm good. What was that weight?
That's an interesting question.
What was that mm-hmm. weight? And that told me what that weight. I said, you know, so... Do we want to shoot for what the papers say? And do we want to shoot for what you felt great at? In addition to you feeling good, your numbers actually reflect mm-hmm. that as well, mm-hmm. right? Your biomarkers reflect that, because you got to be comfortable in the skin that you in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I will say, and she will tell you this, is that the reason I'm saying that is because I too am struggling with, as I age, as we go through this thing, let me tell y'all.
Oh, Jesus. But also, talk about, like, your body transitioning after children.
That's what I was going to talk about. And she knows this. And it was weird to me. And I'm one of those, I don't want to say weirdo, that's kind of, I don't like using names. But I enjoyed, pregnancy for me was great. I was mm-hmm. one of those, she laughs at me. I was like, this was great. I was fine. But I was also blessed in that I was able to gain the, you know, what, you know, the recommended, I was mm-hmm. still within the normal recommendation mm-hmm. of what you were supposed mm-hmm. to gain. And for me, I did not, my weight came down and like fast, quickly.
You were able to bounce back.
Listen, yeah. mm-hmm. very quickly. Within mm-hmm. 3 months, it was great. It was fine. My first one, I was back, you know, doing whatever. I didn't make any effort. Mm-hmm. And I don't like saying that because, oh, you know, you're bragging. No, it just kind of happened. That's straight up.
That was just your body. Yeah.
But that's genetics. I can't take it. That's mommy. Like, that's a mother's side of family.
I didn't get it from her.
And so, but realistically, but for me, what happened though with my second kid, with my son, similarly, I lost the weight, but he had allergies. He had mm-hmm. food allergies. He had a lot of different things.
A lot of things.
And I was nursing, I was mm-hmm. breastfeeding mm-hmm. and I couldn't eat those things. And I end up losing a lot of weight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let me tell you, I was going out and people were like, oh, I want to look like you in my next lifetime. And I look at them, I said,
you were miserable.
You
at
see
that
the
time.
Encouragement?
Yeah.
People treat you so differently.
I hated it. Yeah. Because I was emaciated.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you could, my bones and everything. I'm like, that's not cute. Mm-hmm. I did not like that. Mm-hmm. But society told everybody zero. And I'm like, no, no, no. My society, my cohort told me they liked my booty. Like my mom always said, you know, it isn't even my mom, even when I went to college.
It's your family, it's the people who know you.
Yes.
But also that's where it kind of be tricky, because it's the people who know you who will be like, wait, what happened? You looking at the same time will uh-huh. be like, oh, you look real good. Because I know for me, I'm similar to you in the fact that like diet culture has been something that did not really like penetrate me where mm-hmm. I was engaging mm-hmm. into it. Mm-hmm. Actually, now I think about that, I wouldn't even say that's true. Diet culture has always been,
especially in, as in a my sports face. Player, ma'am.
I mean, I played sports, but it wasn't even really because of me. It yeah. was because my mom had mm-hmm. fluctuated weight. My family, like, I've been around people who are both very fit and mm-hmm. people who society said was not fit. Mm-hmm. And the way that people talk about women who are labeled not fit versus mm-hmm. the way they talk about men
right.
who are not fit is just so nasty. It's, yeah. like, it's just yeah. like this perpetual, like before people who don't even know you feel the need to make mm-hmm. comments and comments about you about or be weight. Like, you're doing something and they'll be like, oh, you about to eat. And it's like, and for me, who's not, I was not mm-hmm. bigger. Uh-huh. I have been bigger in this body, mm-hmm. but I wasn't conventionally big. Seeing those things, mm-hmm. you absorb it in a yeah. very yeah. weird you way do. Where it's like, yeah. you feel a, I would feel so angry when people would say things around mm-hmm. my larger, mm-hmm. what's it called, body friends or mm-hmm. my mom. I would be so upset while at the same time, this like, not fully recognized fear mm-hmm. of
being in that position.
Not being in that position, but not being in the safety of the body that yeah. I've been. My body has always been something that mm-hmm. has been mm-hmm. sought after. Yeah. People have always yeah. been attracted to it, said things about it. So when I got older and I was not working out to the degree that I was mm-hmm. and I did not, like I was in that hustle culture yeah. and I didn't notice that I had gained weight and then I like became aware of it, the amount of like shame, the mm-hmm. amount of like self-critical talk, like I yeah. was really shitting on myself yeah. because it's like yeah. you know how yeah. people talk mm-hmm. yeah. about people,
right?
How
and you take on that language yourself.
And mind you, mm-hmm. also being a darker skinned woman,
ooh, baby.
Like mm-hmm. your uh-huh. body and your looks and what you represent is so ingrained. And being tall, like it was just so much stuff. Yeah. People uh-huh. were calling me big when I was. I've never been a size zero, but if you would have looked at me, yeah. people would have guessed, yeah. thought that I was.
Yeah.
But people were calling me big instead of tall. And I remember even little being like, I'm not big, I'm tall. Because mm-hmm. like it was, I felt the need to make the distinction.
Oh, yes,
of like,
I experienced mm-hmm. that. Because mm-hmm. listen, back home they said, oh, she's a bamboo sticks. Mm-hmm. They called me bamboo sticks, right? But being tall and somebody, I don't know if it was my mom or someone corrected them. No, Daphne is thin. She's mm-hmm. not skinny. That's what it was. Daphne's mm-hmm. not skinny. She's thin. That's her natural, you know, whatever. And so that was it. But interestingly enough, the power of words is fascinating.
It is.
Because even though we are being commented, oh, they're thin, they look great. You know, they'll say this, whatever. But you know what happens is as you get older, you that becomes a fabrication of like who you are.
Crystallizes
yeah.
you.
Yes. Yeah, like I have to and look so like this to be accepted.
Exactly. Yeah. And but it creates a really big mind F.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Fuck. For people.
No,
I can't say
it's like literally a trap yeah. door that's it's a trap waiting door, for you to fall.
You know what
into.
I mean? Because now I'm trying to be mindful and my best friend and talk about that when she won't remember. We talked about it years ago. But it's like when I talk to my little girl, I'm like, darling, you smart. Look mm-hmm. at you. Look at the effort you put in. You're good. Look at you. I try to make sure. Now, I may not do that 100% of the time. I don't say, oh, you got some nice legs. You got some do this. You got to do that. Because God forbid one day them legs don't look the way that she's going to be like, you see what I mean? And it wasn't intentional.
And for real.
Well, you know.
For real.
We know we're going to have a transparency here. Daphne and I used to be compared all the time
sure.
when we were younger yeah. in sizes, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. and the confusing message for me, because when we were living back home, mm-hmm. Daphne used to be teased around being too skinny.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. I was technically like fit and nice size. Mm-hmm. We come here, then the shoe flipped, yep. then Daphne's glorified. Mm-hmm. And even by family members and moms too, around like how skinny she is. And then I was fat shamed mm-hmm. around my
yep.
size.
Yep.
And
yep.
it became that discriminatory to the point where, it, you know, me and my mom really had to go at it yeah. because, you know, there was the comparison not only about our interests that were different, but our bodies were very magnified.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
much.
So yeah. that almost and made I think, more different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember as I became comfortable within my skin and my body, I had to give my sister permission to like, hey, we can talk about it. Cause she get uncomfortable. She's like, well, don't call yourself that. It's not fair. Like she gets, I was like, no, but let me own my stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. She had to teach me that. And it's so funny.
I think
yeah.
of kind of letting go of that. But I think growing up for us and
the mixed messages we got in both different cultures. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, my mom didn't notice that. My mom is a nurse, so I want to be clear. Like, she wasn't intentionally, in her mind, she's trying to save me and help me.
Yeah.
But saying, like, hey, you're too fat, you need to da-da-da-da-da. You know, her saying that is, like, hearing
it's,
it.
It's
I'm
the
like,
directness and it's the putting what down. Happening? It's like you're saying, it's like making it be like, there's something
you need
wrong.
To be like your sister. Yeah. Like, you need to lose this weight. Or she'll say things like, ah, you didn't get that from me. You get it from your father's side. You know, things like that made me start to, like, okay, well, how come I wasn't built like you then?
I like that point that you brought up, too, because I think that what we fail to realize is that those small bits over time really manifest into self-hatred.
That's what I'm saying. And so you don't see, you can be this smart, bad boss chick, and you don't see your boss chick because you're like, well, no, I put on this like 20 pounds. I'm like, oh my goodness, what is happening? But I will say this, mommy is interesting. Mommy will have Jay try everything. Jay, you want to try this? You want to try that? She will spend whatever Jay was willing to try, she would.
And I was just doing
for her, it was because you work in the ER, you see the worst outcome.
Yeah, and back in the day, the way they used to make it seem like if you're gonna die tomorrow.
I think about the videos that we consumed as kids, the messaging, the books.
Remember
it was all
that,
of this
that
like
person that was on the couch and it was a dude and they were big.
Disgusting.
Y'all remember? Like, and they would make it so that you would like
feel disgusted.
So when you see this person, that there is disgust. Like you just. And so for just going off of that thing, like that self-hatred, right?
Yes.
Like me being commented of how beautiful my legs are. Oh, what's it called? You're so thin. You don't have cellulite. So then when you inevitably get older
and
you get those things I'm immediately feeling like, I'm messed up. I'm no longer enough.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. I'm no longer worthy.
Exactly.
I'm no longer attractive for these things that I once had.
Exactly.
Right? And so then it then turns into, well, then how do I get it back?
Yeah.
And that's where diet loves to creep itself
creep
right
into that
here
diet
as
culture.
The magic pill I can help you get that thing that you lost if you just maintain this thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not realistic, right? Because as we get older, and this is what I'm dealing with right now, because at some point you will realize what you used to eat doesn't work.
It doesn't.
Yeah. What you used to do doesn't work. You know why?
No alcohol. No sugar.
You know what I mean?
Your body
but your hormones.
To that.
Your hormones are changing, right? Yeah. Your hormones are changing, and your hormones has a lot. You know, so that's the diet culture as well.
What do you see with the male who struggle with eating disorder? Because that's a thing.
I would say not even males, but just black people in general.
Yeah.
Like, how are you bringing that up?
Yeah.
You know, they don't. Black people don't necessarily. Typically, you don't see them report it.
No, because they don't even know what it is.
They don't know that it is, but there's understand. There's that's just such a complicated issue. They don't know what it is, and keep in mind too, if they realize there's an issue, like
we're less
with your culture,
you're
less likely to be like, okay, what you got? You can't. What's wrong with you? You need to eat something. You know,
right?
What I mean?
It's either you need to eat or you need to stop
eating. You know what I mean? It's always
figure it out on your own.
Figure out on your own thing, not understanding. And sometimes, by the time we realize, like, oh, this is something an issue, the damage that has been done. You know, is so much. Like, you know what I mean? You have to deal with hospitalization. And that's when you really need
multi-interdisciplinary.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, at that point, once a family member has to get hospitalized, that's usually when people pay attention. But that's immediately when people start to feel like, oh, like, you're too much. Or they'll start somehow blaming the parents, or they'll somehow like feel some type of responsibility, and either will then become helicoptery or will then somehow disengage as like, well, you put yourself into
the situation,
you had no issue, or it wasn't, it's like immediate, like,
or just choose different foods.
Here is why I brought it up though, because I do have male clients, and even down to like the men in our lives that we know. Who are very, I'm seeing a prevalent, and that's why I asked the question around, like, there is a very, so much attention on how they look and how
that
they
is true.
Gym
that
culture
is true.
And also, you know, who they'll be able to attract. And really having some body issues, which is, I guess,
it is.
In my experience,
overlooked.
Something
it's overlooked.
That is not talked about.
It's
we don't
not talked
think
about.
That men also struggle with eating disorders. Agreed. And because I've had a couple male that I'm like, that I've had to say, like, no, like, you have disorder.
Yeah.
No, they do.
Like,
they
you
do.
Have,
they do.
You know, like, something is showing up here. It's more than just the fact that you feel.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts about talking to men, though?
You know, I don't have any issue talking to men. I have a very sensitive spot for males, and period, especially in this day and age, as it relates to the pressure, especially black and brown males, mm-hmm. that is put on them. I am alarmed by the sheer, what's required of them?
Yeah.
You need to make, that's what it is, unrealistic expectation. You need to make this income. You need to be able to afford this. I need to be able to drive this. I need to be able to have this home. I need to be able to do this. You need to be able to look this way. You need to be able to dress this way, buy this type of shoes,
and
build a house and all of that. So we telling them all of that, but we don't raise little boys, black or brown, yellow, whatever you want to do, to basically be so in tune with themselves and mm-hmm. say that. But mm-hmm. we also live in a society where we tell them at a very young age how they need to look. Mm-hmm. So they're growing, realizing like, man, yeah, my belly's pudging. Oh, I'm going to go to... at the age of 50, I'm going to do, what is it, Dr. Miami or something.
Mm-hmm.
Go do
that. Or like the big back. I don't want to be seen as big back.
That's a new thing.
That's a new thing.
I was just about to say that.
Saying, but there's always been. Before, it's you a fat ass. It's you looking like Precious.
There's always things. And males will just, men are just, sometimes they
struggle with body
are very, what's it called, cutthroat, in that they will come direct, like the first thing they will call out is something of your physical appearance.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Being fat is, I mean, I know from like my brother, right, like who was in a larger space. He is 6'9".
Mm-hmm.
has always been a taller person, what's it called, stronger person. Mm-hmm. And so from the young age, people calling him these things, people immediately telling you information about, well, you got to be careful about what it is that you're eating.
Yeah.
You have to be like, since you're little.
See, and
like,
that going to determine... How the type of partner they select, the type of job they select, what they post on their LinkedIn profile, what it's going to affect every single thing.
The things that I even, what's it called, celebrate about myself and put out is not going to be like...
It's going to be so different. And that's what I said. It's just, it's really health at every size, really understanding it's really being comfortable in your skin. Mm-hmm. Because like when you have different cultures that plays into it, when you have different health conditions that you can't help that affect you, your thyroid is not functioning properly. You come from a family of all of you look at them, all of them, just hippie this and this. People always said, well, your sister this and this. I said, let me be very clear. Jay eats clean.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people this all the time. Jay don't have an issue with eating clean. Jay may have an issue with quantity.
Yes, I do.
But it's not about clean.
Because I've been wanting more and more.
It's not about clean. And so I say that all the time, but it is an issue now. And as my son, this ninja is 10 years old, and he wants to tell me.
Let's talk about the wrestling. Yeah.
He wants to do, he wants to lift weights now.
Yeah, because he wants to be stronger.
My baby is telling me, it's funny. He said, Mommy. What do you think if I do? And he's telling me he's doing push-ups, y'all. He's coming. He's getting my weights and the dumbbells and putting them up so he can do barbells. He said, you see, I have a 3-pack. I have this.
And I'm looking at him. And we don't even know where he got it from. Somebody came and called him Big Back or something.
Yeah, somebody called
him
Big Back.
And he literally messed with his whole system.
Yeah.
And some, a kid.
Because he's aware.
Yeah,
he's aware.
Very time, but he's also aware of what it means.
Yes.
And also what implications are.
A little girl told him he was fat.
But that was it. It's
y'all seen my son.
He's not, but it's like, it's the implication to know that being called that means I'm not going to be accepted.
Yeah,
right. That's true.
Especially as a dude, I'm not going to get the whistle called access to the best looking girls, the most popular girls, the things of that. Because he's 10. So he is moving into the range where his understanding of the
social circle
is coming into play. So like for men, it is around how your body is pretty much your... We're talking about monetary value.
Your body
is your value, both in your ability to make money, but also to be a billboard
taking
of strength.
It to that
how you show yourself. And so for women, our capitalist in our body comes in our attractiveness in terms of like what do we provide mm-hmm. to a partner into mm-hmm. the world. Yeah. And unfortunately mm-hmm. for Black women or brown people, brown women, our body has always been a sexual...
Hyper-sexualized, yeah.
Like, it's always been something that people felt access to in terms of, like, opinion.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Touch.
Entitled like, to, you labor. Know,
like, all of those things. Yeah. Yeah. To some yeah. degree, yeah. when we look at, like, how diet culture has really enmeshed and really fucked up a lot of different things.
Listen to me.
It's really around image.
Yeah.
Like it's really, it's,
yeah,
it's
no, image, it's,
like
it's
how,
true.
How can I show and portray myself in a way that is the most likable?
Yeah.
That right. is the yeah. most attractive. And yeah. unfortunately, in our day and age, being light, being thin, skinny, mm-hmm. whatever adjective that you want to mm-hmm. use for being a certain aesthetic, mm-hmm. as well as maybe a certain height.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, even thinness having a hierarchy within that.
Mm, that part.
What that yep. looks like.
Yes, indeed.
Right?
Yes,
like
indeed.
Before, yes, indeed. You had people going to the gym. I remember yes. when I was in school, they're over here talking about, oh, you look like the Hulk. Now all of a sudden, everybody wants to be a gym baddie.
Yeah.
Now everybody wants and, to yeah, get
I,
the
I can relate Hulk, to that, like, right? I did like three different sports. I did track, cheerleading, and dance mm-hmm. in high school. So like, I like, yeah, perhaps... I now, one, the eating was already an issue then. I'm mm-hmm. going all day at school without eating. I've got three different sports after school. Mm. Then I come home and I eat, like, a whole entire pizza mm-hmm. and, like, whatever
that's
stuff.
That's it for the day.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's already on the track.
Mm-hmm.
But also coupling that with the fact that I grew up around a lot of people that did not look like me. So I am 110 pounds, still the fattest person on my team. Mm. And looking at it in that way. Mm. So I really like what you said about like trying to find yeah. some like happiness at any stage that you're yeah. at. Because yeah. just thinking back to previous versions of myself, like... Yeah. Girl.
Yeah.
For sure.
If I was I feel like if I was 110 pounds right now, sure. I would look sick.
Yeah. That's
so
listen,
I think about
do
that.
Do you understand I was that.
Yeah.
And I was like I was like, what are they seeing?
Yeah.
But you know, that was for them. And that was that's their story, right? And that's what yeah. they're told. And for me, that wasn't for me because it was always like, yeah, she's thin. But even I'm telling you, different part in this country. So when I went to college, I went to college in the South. It was like
they want you to be thick, girl.
Listen, yeah. And I was not that. I was not that. But you know what? They always tell me, oh, yeah, she's small, but she got a butt on her though. You know, so now you
and
know.
And then so you start taking pride on that
and
thing.
That booty. Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. I was just like, they'll tell you you need to eat.
Yeah, they'll tell me you need to eat. But you know, it wasn't. But I will say, I had at that point, there was a guy I was dating, and I remember he was exercise physiology or physical therapy major. He was like, D, don't worry about that. I said, I ain't. And he was just like, nah. He said, let me, all that thickums they have, that's going to be adipose tissue. That's going to be cellulite when they get older. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. He said, that's going to turn into cellulite. He said, and you're going to be just fine. They're going to look at you. And I will never, to this day, I never forget that. I was just like, thank you for that. And, yeah. and you know, and I don't know if I needed it at that time. I don't know. But honestly, it never fazed me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I came from a culture, you know, that prefer, you know, I still was thin. You know, they liked it. But I could have used some meat on my bones. Mm-hmm. But you go down south, they're like, you need to be thicker. That's what they like. You need to be thicker. Not only need to be thicker, you need to be lighter. But then he's like, yeah, let me tell you. They're going to regret that. That's
thicker,
got to be
but lighter,
light.
But also in the...
Proper places.
Like you gotta have TNA.
This is the part
but
this is the part where beauty
is eye
you
the
know,
beholder.
Is eye in the beholder, yeah. but also, you know, it's dependent on the different cultures that you yeah. kinda go into in the sense of that okay. there's colonizer culture that you go to, aka Western culture, and then there's other cultures. Because
mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, 2 years ago, I told you going to Nigeria. I said, "Well, shit,
they were really in love with
me. They were. I lived my best life, Lord. Like they love me."
Yes.
Like, yes. It was crazy, but I remember yes. how the people we traveled, remember I told you, they were way smaller than I was, but they were so upset and bothered that when we went out that they were not getting attention.
Yeah,
and couldn't imagine understand, what that's like. Because I remember one time, they're like, Jay, we don't want you to go out with us no more because we're not getting to meet nobody. I'm like,
because
so now y'all know how it feels.
Picture like, yeah, I'm like, picture what it's like at home.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That part, and, but it's interesting. Crazy.
Okay, so let's wrap it up for the people a little bit. What are some ways that we can maybe get away from these cultural ideas about body image and maybe even some tips on getting connected with a nutritionist?
Yeah, so quick questions. How do you can get away with that? You just understand, you have to understand food plays, the role that food plays in our life.
Mm-hmm.
Food is important to our family. You know, since I was a little girl, back in Haiti, you know, there was always eating meals at the dinner table.
Yeah, that community.
That
piece.
Community is huge. Mm-hmm. And to this day, even that we have kids, it's important for my mom to, we have kids, we have families, we still had Sunday dinners. You know, mm-hmm. we didn't eat every day at the dinner. And now it's like, you know, as she gets older, it's, you know, every couple of Sundays.
Yeah.
So food is very important. And food is community. Food is love.
Yes.
Food is just comfort. Food mm-hmm. is what you need to continue to function. Mm-hmm. Your cells and your body needs it. There is no good or bad food, but understanding that there are certain foods that works better mm-hmm. for your body.
Yeah. You know? Effective or ineffective?
Ineffective. Speaking very our good. Exactly. Right. And so your body, the diet plays a crucial role in which what you guys mentioned in regulating certain neurotransmitters in mm-hmm. your body, like, you know, the dopamine and that you talk about in
serotonin.
And serotonin, mm-hmm. right? So the serotonin is a feel-good hormone. The dopamine is the motivation mm-hmm. hormone. And I bring that in. The reason I bring that up is because there is a saying you have to be mindful of the type of food that you put in your
body.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so what does that mean? That means that including like foods that are high, good fish oils that are protected mm-hmm. for your heart. So you're talking about mackerels, you're talking about salmon, you're talking about like nuts and seeds, you know, you're talking about lean proteins, yes. like you need your proteins, mm-hmm. like, right. But the lean protein.
So that's like turkey, chicken.
Correct. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then, but,
or chickpeas,
you know, but vegetables, I can't even tell you, only less than 10% of Americans consume the recommended amount of vegetables that they need to.
I could believe that.
I can see that.
I could believe that.
You understand what I mean? Yeah, and so that's a problem, friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, listen.
I don't think I saw a green vegetable.
But you know, but that's real. But that's real for a lot of people. But that's also a problem, right?
Yes.
Because that's part of, you know, this culture. You know, we took one slice of bread, but they don't focus that. Balance is the key.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And I always go to the my plate method. Look mm-hmm. at your plate. Seriously. Okay. Do I have, if half of it fruits and vegetable is, you know, do I have my whole grains, a quarter plate? Do I have my protein? Do I have that? And that way, you know, well, that's balanced. Now, how colorful is my plate?
Yeah.
Because different colors bring give about different vitamins, mm-hmm. give you certain verticals that are good for your body. That is good for your brain.
Yes.
And if your brain
and
is
your skin.
And your skin, right. very mm-hmm. good. And if you're not eating those protein foods, if you're not eating those complex carbohydrates.
Isn't it a foundation for our hair, our skin? Listen, the
building blocks. This is all over the place. It's very important. It's, mm-hmm. you know, we need them. And so if your body is not getting what it needs, and you can get them from soy or nuts, just because you don't eat meat does not mean you can't get protein somewhere else. Like, right. You get tofu. There is lentils. There is beans. There's like
chickpeas,
so many different things that you can do. Yeah. And so it's all in the balance. Eat foods that make you feel good. Mm-hmm. And it's not the donuts, right? That doesn't mean you can't have a donut, though.
Right.
Let's be very clear. It just means that
my
we have to
call it. You could indulge.
You can indulge.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's
he's
what my
correct.
Nutritionist calls it.
Yeah,
it's
indulge.
Your
it's
happy
okay.
Meal
it's
day.
Your happy meal day, and you can mm-hmm. have that, and then just focus, like, you know, you eating your balance, but you know, getting your beans and lentils and focusing on a diet that is more plant based. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly important. It's important for your mood. It's important for the way you function, and you'll feel lighter too. You yes. know what I mean? You'll feel yeah. lighter. And it's just, if we stop focusing on like, I can't have this, but I can't have that. You just, no, yeah. you just need to get away from that restriction.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah. Daphne.
Yeah. I appreciate you, Daphne. Where can people find you if they're looking for more information on nutritionism and nutrition?
let's see. I am on Instagram, like Health Wellness Pack. Actually, I have a website too,
mm-hmm. yes.
healthwellnesspack.com. And I can give it to you guys. You guys can share it.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into our listener letters. Mm-hmm. Body image and pregnancy.
I've been thinking a lot about starting a family. but I have some personal hurdles that I'm struggling with. One of my biggest concerns is my body image and self-worth, which have always been tied to how I look. I know I bring value to the world through my career in nonprofit work, but I also feel that much of my perceived worth comes from my appearance. I worry how pregnancy will change my body, and if I will struggle with self-hate or resentment because of it. I also have a deep fear of aging and losing my value to society. I'm actively working on these feelings through counseling and medication, but they still weigh heavily on me. Another major concern is how pregnancy and having a child will affect intimacy with my SO. We are very sexually active, and I fear that physical and emotional closeness will change, whether due to exhaustion, my own insecurities, or simply a shift in priorities. Since my sex drive is higher than his, I worry that I will feel disconnected or that spontaneity will be lost when a child enters our home. I know these concerns might sound vain, but I want to acknowledge and work through them now rather than regret a decision I can't take back. I want to hear from others who have faced similar struggles. How did you navigate these feelings and maintain a sense of self and intimacy through pregnancy and motherhood?
So this person's asking basically about the body image space. How do we
love
ourselves at each
She said a lot of stuff.
There was a lot of things there. I am someone who I can actually relate to her around one of my fears. Let me be honest. Let me take it back.
I never saw myself
being pregnant. I used to literally tell my sister, like,
yes, she did.
You're going to carry my baby for me. Part of that for me was around, like, my body, around, like, I don't want to blow up. And I know that sounds vain, and I know she said it sounds vain, and I had to normalize that for myself. But there was other things around. It was also not getting bigger, but also the fear that I witnessed with pregnancy. That I'm like, yeah, I don't want to go through all of that. And so for her, I want to say, I think what she's experiencing is very normal.
Yeah.
As far as, like, the intimacy part and that changing after you giving birth, I have had women, you know, who talk about and struggle the fear of that. Sure. But honey, let me tell you, you can get a tighten up in that vajayjay. It's not a problem.
Vaginal
rejuvenation. Mm-hmm. Cleanse all that and do some Kegel exercise and sis, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
And also understanding, like, I think it's perfectly normal as you are connected to your body. You know, pregnancy is something foreign to your body, foreign to you. It's like, it's great, but I think I want to say, like, maybe doing some work around normalizing things for your body. Some things I've done in the past with clients is basically what it feels like to be pregnant by wearing, like, a fake pregnancy pill, like carrying it and looking at yourself in the mirror and seeing, like, how does it feel to view yourself in a larger stance and things like that. So I will say just do some work around the exposure of it, but also normalize the fact that it's so super okay for you to feel this way.
Absolutely.
And now she's not alone in the boat. And like, also, you ain't got to worry, like I said, the sex work, girl, you ain't got to worry about it.
The
but
thing is, go ahead.
Because my question was, isn't that a misconception? After
I was just about to say that you don't need to do anything with your vagina after birth.
That's what I was thinking is the when you were talking is that like one that's a misconception.
It is
that
a misconception.
Your stuff down there works more,
and it's going to be what it is.
And it's you can obviously there are things as you get older if you would like to do a nice little pimp my ride down there. Go for it. You know, she said
pimp my ride.
If you want to do that, go for it. But like, I think there's a couple things that I want to address around how she's using certain things to reinforce her, like, sense of self.
Yes.
Like, even the fact that you using sex as a means to make you feel worthy, attractive, or even secure.
Yeah.
That to me is more of something that you want to kind of explore a little bit. Because I mean,
Did she say she enjoys sex?
And that she has a higher sex drive than her partner.
She enjoys it.
But also there's where does the fulfillment enjoyment coming from?
I see.
Right? Like, is it, are you enjoying it because I'm getting the release and I'm getting feeling the sense of closeness?
Yeah.
Or am I enjoying it because it confirms that validated. My partner is attracted to me.
That part.
And that makes me, and so that's
you went through something there. I can see that.
I don't think they were clear around that, but I can see the connection you could make with their body around that.
Yes.
It seems like to me their fear is around their intimacy and their sex drive changing.
Because after pregnancy, as a result of the hormonal change.
I heard the point, too, around... The thing that stood out to me is the statement around not being accepted in society when you look different.
Yep.
That's the part that really stood out to me and perhaps is something that they can maybe work through with some support of a mental health professional or even with working with a nutritionist to help them identify.
Yeah, she did say she's working on... Didn't she say she was working on some of those issues?
No. She said that she is working on it, but is looking for more support with that, right?
So
I think that that is perhaps an area to hone in on how you maybe... What are your own internalized beliefs.
Yeah.
What are some things that you have now picked up? Even the idea of like having imposter syndrome when people maybe make comments about how she looks or like leading with how she looks and feeling insecure about that.
That's maybe having some other successes that
she would want to highlight. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree with you, Tyler. The first thing I heard when she said that was exactly what we were talking about. She's been told since she was young, her beauty was had everything.
That's
so she morphed into that's who I am.
That's
everything. She's boss chick, but she don't see any of that.
Yeah.
She has a great job doing well. None of that matters
because guess what? A partner.
Who's that? And you know, and the whole you made a great connection about sex. But here's the thing with pregnancy and nutrition and weight.
Tell them, girl, you love pregnancy children.
Dude, which is why I was supposed to have all your children.
Yeah, you sure would.
Yeah, so she thought. But here's the thing. If you and your significant other, you know, you guys are thinking about conceiving, if that's something you want to do, you start talking to your healthcare provider now, right? To make sure that, you know, I always say, make sure you are at your best health. I put healthy in quotation marks.
Mental health too.
Because that's different. Yes, indeed. You know, that you're at your best because, you know, like what, you know, again, going back to what my number's looking like, you know, am I at the weight that I want to? Because when you are carrying a child, there is a certain, based on your pre-weight, you know, whatever you are, preconceived weight, there's a certain number of recommended. It's recommended weight that you're supposed to gain. But you want to make sure you're healthy. You want to make sure you're getting all your nutrients. You want to make sure, because when you conceive, right, primarily, you know, you get your nutrients, but the placenta,
the baby's getting what it's going to get.
Your ass will be looking garnished.
Yeah, you're going to get what you're going to eat. And it's fine, and it's healthy, right? And then after you have that child, right, you start, within reason, you start working on, you know, slow strategies to get you to that weight that you want to get to. It is scary because the world have told you that this where you are right now.
But
the world have told her that all she got is how she looks right now.
She's trying to go back to that
as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So it's more of the mind, like, no, I am more than what the world. Screw them. They don't know what the heck they're talking about.
Yeah. Like, is she able to identify more than her looks?
I also want to give some like grace and empathy around the fact that the truth is her body will change. There's an acceptance.
And unfortunately, society will low-key
Because one of my girlfriends, like, her body did change. She did have your 6 or 4 pack. Her body was very fit. And after her 2 kids, it's like she does have that excess skin because her daughter really stretched her out to the point where it's like her body really expanded. And now she, you know, when it comes to her stomach area and stuff like that, she just does not, you know, she's a small person. She does not feel
She doesn't have that.
So when I read this, I actually think about around like, oh, yeah, like this either. But either way,
being
like,
okay, you know, being
around
okay.
that part, yeah, around... Yeah.
you know, her, let's be, the reality of it is doing some radical acceptance that her body will change.
Yes.
Will
change. And then also, be okay.
And that's okay.
Yes. And also okay. radically accepting the grief that comes with accepting mm-hmm. that. Because I think people like preach this thing of like acceptance being this kumbaya and I'm going to be,
that
like,
means that you like, won't
pass,
be upset.
Like, it's almost like I'm passing off like a cute little note.
No. You got to accept.
That you will cry about, something that you will feel lost without, something that you will need to kind of like have to reorient and recalibrate to, because you're losing something that was vital to you, something that told you, or at least helped you expect how people were going to show up around you, right? Because if you're used to looking a certain way, getting complimented a certain way, I already know how people see me and what space I take. Right. Now that I'm in a different body and in a different, what's it called, experience, I don't know how the other person's going to take me.
Yeah.
The rules are different. Yeah. Like, the game is different. Yeah. And I need to relearn all that. And that's not always a great place to be in.
And I may sound controversial with this, but, you know, I'm going to say it anyway, okay?
Oh.
And we live in a world, she has options. If she is not comfortable carrying,
that's
she can
okay too.
To
that is true.
Her mind can. She could also get a surrogate, too.
That's true.
That's always, like, there's option there.
There are options
there,
too.
Because
like,
if the value,
judgment.
Right. Yeah. If their value,
that there was judgment
everywhere.
If her value is I want to be a mother, there's a lot of different ways for her to be a mother if she still feel uncomfortable about the changes. So there is that option for you too. Like, if that's something you and your partner talk about and it's within your economic means, I mean, you know, I don't give a fuck what people think, so fuck the judgment that she will get around that, because I don't. But also, like, make that an option as well. I think sometimes we feel like, you know, coming out the vajayjay is the only way, but it could come out somebody else's vajayjay and it still be mine.
That is very true. I like that you gave that option, like that. Also another thing to maybe think about is, do you want to have children?
I was just about to say that.
Do you want to have children?
Because she's not sure, but it sounds like, let me tell you, society make people feel like that's something.
Like the nuclear family is like, this is must.
Please understand that it's okay for you not, if you make that decision, it's not for you, that's okay as well.
Yeah.
And if you make that decision is for you, it's okay. The truth of the matter is your life is going to be changed for better or for worse, however you want to do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's going to change. Your body is going to change. And all of it eventually will be well, but it takes some acceptance. It takes time. It takes healing. It takes growth. It takes everything. And them little things will take everything that you have.
Yeah. And you don't have.
And that you don't have. And that's okay too. And that's the choice that you make. But again, it's part about choice. But I will say this. Do ensure that whoever that significant other is aware of those issues that you're feeling around your body, around conceiving, around intimacy.
Yeah.
Because if you don't feel safe, if you don't feel connected to that person, then that's when you are really going through some issues after you have a child.
I appreciate you saying that.
That really is incredibly important, being on the same page. Understand that, because when you are nurturing a body inside of you and when that comes to life, you have to make sure the support you have, that nucleus from your mother, your sister, your friends, that we need to be on the same page.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if they're not, I hate to say it, they need to go.
For disaster.
But they need to go. They need to go. They need to go, because you need to nurture yourself and your body and your family so you can grow yourself back to whatever is healthy for you.
Yeah.
And that child to whatever that need the milestones that need you.
No, I appreciate that, Daphne. I think that's a great way for us to end, honestly. That is quite the mic drop there.
Right. Exactly. Like, we appreciate you writing
into
us.
Yes.
But talk to your spouse.
Yes. Talk to your spouse, talk to your therapist. But Daphne, I want to really thank you for coming on our show. Thank you for, sitting with us on the couch.
That was funny. It wasn't as bad as I thought. I was stressed out.
But you chilled out, you mellowed out, and we're glad to have you. But I hope you guys will come back and be with us on the couch. Stephanie here.
See you guys. I'm Jay.
I'm Sparkle Time.
Bye.
Bye.